Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Happy to be with you here on Saturday night, September 2nd, 2023, for our WWE Payback post-show. And just a little housekeeping here to start us off. We're also going to be going on the air tomorrow night. So it's going to be a two-for-one weekend here on Wrestling Night in America after All Out. So a rare doubleheader weekend of pay-per-views slash PLEs here and Payback tonight. So we'll talk about it. And then All Out tomorrow night. And All Out has taken on a different look as well with the news coming down earlier today from AEW of CM Punk's departure from the company. He was fired with cause, according to a press release that AEW had put out. So that is something that if you want to talk about tonight, we'll break from the usual routine of covering solely the pay-per-view event. And I know people are going to want to talk about what happened to CM Punk. So feel free to chat us up. The number you want to call is 515-605-9345. Make sure to press 1 if you're listening live and can't join us on the phone. We'd love to get your feedback via email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. See a couple emails already in the hopper. So really thankful for those of you who are participating here. And let's get on with it. The Payback show coming to you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Started off with Becky Lynch defeating Trish Stratus in a steel cage match. This was arguably the best match of the show. I think that it far beyond my expectations. You know, we've seen Trish Stratus since she's returned in some matches that were decent, some that were pretty clunky, and then you add in the steel cage stipulation. And the announcers have made mention that she's never wrestled in a steel cage match before. And it raised some questions about the match quality heading in, but they had a really good match. Zoe Stark getting involved. And then after the match, Stark turning on Trish Stratus. So it was set up like a babyface turn for Zoe Stark. It was set up that way by the announcers. I'm not sure it came across that way. So we'll have to see how they capitalize on that. But, yeah, really hot start to the show. Crowd was really into it. Lynch and Stratus both did a really nice job. Stratus is going to be bruised up tomorrow. She had a nice bruise on her forehead starting, and you could see it throughout the show get bigger and bigger. It's going to be a rough morning for her tomorrow probably with that. But, yeah, really, really good match here. Match number two. Was LA Knight defeating The Miz. John Cena had come out. He had been advertised as the host of Payback. And so The Miz interrupted him, and Cena announced that he was going to be the special ref for Miz's match with LA Knight. They wrestled a long match, longer than it probably needed to be, though it wasn't bad. But you have two wrestlers who are not known for being smooth in the ring in Knight and Miz, and there was some awkwardness, predictably. Nothing that was egregious or anything like that, but certainly they had their rough spots in the match. Cena tried to call it down the middle and ended up endorsing LA Knight after the match. So the length of the match, on a show that exceeded 3 hours with just six matches, couple matches you probably could have cut back on, and this is one of them. I don't think it needed to go this far, whether it was WWE testing LA Knight in a match of this length or whatever the case may be. It did go longer than it probably needed to, but it was not bad. It was not bad at all. It could have been much worse. John Cena giving that endorsement to LA Knight is interesting. And probably is a good sign for LA Knight's push going forward in WWE. Match number three was Rey Mysterio defeating Austin Theory to retain the United States Championship. Again, good match. I think Austin Theory in some ways has a very similar problem to Raquel Rodriguez, which we'll talk about here in a moment or two, and that is she just has trouble connecting with the audience. And I think Austin Theory in some ways has a similar problem. There just isn't very much interesting about his character in the same way that there just isn't much interesting about Raquel Rodriguez. You know, she's a baby face. She smiles a lot. She's friends with Liv Morgan. She's very proud of her back muscles, but there isn't a lot of meat to those characters. And so there's just not a lot to, as a viewer, to hook me into the match. You know, Rey Mysterio is obviously a legend, the United States title on the line, that should mean something. But Austin Theory as a challenger just doesn't really get me going. And so it was a good match, but not a lot there. The fourth match was title change. We had Finn Balor and Damian Priest defeating Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn to win the tag titles in what was billed as a Pittsburgh street fight. We had JD McDonagh, Dominic Mysterio coming out to help Judgment Day. And so now, by virtue of this victory, Judgment Day, all the members of Judgment Day have titles of some sort. I think that strengthens Judgment Day. They're in a strong position to begin with. I get the temptation to put the titles on them. Owens and Zayn have been champions since WrestleMania, so you know they've had a decent run with the tag titles. The brawl was wild at times. It was all over the arena. They did a lot of stuff, and so I thought this was a good match and compelling. I thought they did a lot. This was another match where there was outside interference. You had it in half the matches on the show. I'm not sure if that's really a good percentage to have on a PLE like this, but we'll see what the feedback is on that. I don't think it's going to be something that people are going to have a huge problem with. Then we had Cody Rhodes as a guest on the Grayson Waller Effect. Cody said that he pulled some strings backstage, and Raw has a new wrestler, that being Jey Uso, who very publicly and famously in storyline quit SmackDown a few weeks ago. And so Jey came out and super kicked Grayson Waller without saying anything. So we still have to wait for the first public comments of Jey Uso, Raw superstar. So there's your hook for Raw on Monday night. Jey Uso moving to Raw, that's something that I suggested should or could happen right here on Wrestling Night in America. I figured Jey going to Monday Night Raw would give him the chance to freshen himself up as a character, and really getting him away from the bloodline could actually freshen up the bloodline themselves too. So I think this is going to be a win-win. Eventually, Jey's path with the bloodline is going to intersect once again, and I think it'll feel fresher at that point. And, you know, you also have Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes on the same brand now. You've got Jey Uso and Sami Zayn on the same brand, and Jey Uso and Kevin Owens. How will they coexist, especially now that Jey Uso is a babyface? What are their interactions going to be looking like? So I think that's really something to give a new dimension to the Monday Night Raw show. Match number five was Rhea Ripley defeating Raquel Rodriguez to retain the Women's World title. It was a competitive match. It was a long match. WWE has not been shy about going short on women's matches on PLEs. They've done it with Natalya. They've done it with Zelina Vega. They've not been shy about making the pecking order of the women's division known through these matches. And so I think even though Raquel Rodriguez loses here, I think it's a I think management, by putting her in a competitive long match on a PLE, is showing faith in her. I thought she did okay, but I didn't. I think she looked a little out of place there with Rhea Ripley, both as a personality and as an in-ring worker. But it was still a decent match. And then we had Dominic Mysterio interfere. That was the third match, by the way, that had the interference in it. And the main event was Seth Rollins over Shinsuke Nakamura to retain the World Championship. Great Muta was seated at ringside for this one. A lot of work on the back, as you'd expect. I thought that I had written after, I believe it was SummerSlam, and I threw Shinsuke Nakamura out there as someone who could be a potential challenger to a championship. But I kind of hesitated because he just hadn't been portrayed as a big deal. And I'll give credit to WWE. They did what they could to build him up into a reasonable challenger on a B-level pay-per-view. But I think you saw in the reaction to this match by the live crowd in Pittsburgh that they weren't necessarily buying that. And I can't blame them. I mean, I think it's hard for fans to take someone like Nakamura seriously as a challenger to the world title, especially in a long match like this. Again, another long match. This is six matches extended over, you know, in excess of 3 hours and 20 minutes. And so I think WWE did as good a job as they could in building up Shinsuke storyline-wise with the back injury and with him turning heel and being a little more vicious. And I thought commentary did a nice job of saying, you know, Nakamura is finally realizing what it takes and how wrestling in WWE is different than Japan and sort of framing it that way. But I think it was just too quick of a turnaround from Shinsuke Nakamura, lower to mid-card wrestler, to Shinsuke Nakamura, world title contender, for the fans to stomach. And I think we saw that in their reactions here tonight. So again, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails, feedback of payback, as well as the CM Punk situation in AEW. So let's go right to the phones. We'll start with the 623 area code. I believe this is Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. Is that true?
That is true, Greg. How are you doing this evening?
I'm glad I got it, Brian. I switched to a new notebook, and I don't have the numbers of all the callers in there who haven't called recently. So I had it in my memory bank. Brian, I'm doing well tonight. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Greg, I know you have a lot going on in your memory bank, so I really appreciate you remembering this. So, Greg, as always,
of course.
I want to thank you for all the hard work you do. I actually owe you a retweet for the it's on the tip of my tongue. Out Loud, right, is your podcast.
Yes.
Okay. I owe you a retweet for that because I did like your last episode. I'm not an AEW guy, so that's going to be a non-CM Punk phone call for me. But I did like your last episode. So about LA Knight.
Thank you. That's Greg Parks Out Loud, which is my new VIP audio show. If you're not a VIP member, pwtorch.com/govip. But I have a column in every Torch newsletter, and now I have a new audio show where I read the column, expand on the column, and really it's, you know, for the members of the Torch who are maybe don't read the newsletter and who rely almost solely on audio. So this gives them an opportunity to interact with my work, even if they don't read the column. So thank you for letting me plug that, Brian.
Anytime. Speaking of newsletters, so I'm the 32-year senior PW Torch VIP subscriber, so I do remember, you know, living back in the early 1990s when I would, you know, sit in my mailbox and wait for the print edition. Well, I guess it was the only edition was the print edition of the Torch to come
that,
in the mail and rip
still,
it open
I'm
to find
still...
out what was going on.
I'm still someone who relies on the print newsletter. I read that thing cover to cover as soon as I get it.
It's funny how I used to, like, kind of, you know, pace myself to let it marinate a little bit. So I might go to, okay, let me read the WWE news part first, and I'll come back and read WCW later. I used to do things like that, but, you know. Always first the cover and then read the below-the-bottom line editor-publisher, Wade Keller's column. So anyway, let's talk about tonight and let's talk about payback. I was going to go one way. I wrote down a question, a comment, and a question I was going to ask you. But I'm going to pivot to something you said a few minutes ago. But first of all, the comment I had was, I tweeted this part out, is that it's still a little strange to me to hear John Cena's music come on. And, he does his thing, and he comes out, and he's around the ring. And not to hear, like, you know, people singing, John Cena sucks. It
yeah.
still rings in the back of my mind, Greg, when I hear his music.
Yeah, it is strange. He's on a different plane of existence within the WWE universe now. He's reached that legend part-time status where fans aren't rebelling against him anymore. They're not sick of him anymore. They're not feeling like his push is being shoved down their throats anymore. He's just the guy who shows up every once in a while, and people are happy to see him now.
And that's, you know, that's the way wrestling is, of course. It was, you know, it's, yeah. I think, let's say you and I discussed this when Kurt Angle came back to WWE, and, you know, his music hit. And right before he left, when he left, they remixed his music so you couldn't sing You Suck. But when he came back, they played that original music where you could say, you know, you could sing You Suck. And I remember just how happy he looked on his face when he heard the people singing that You Suck, because they at least remembered it. It was incredible.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Old habits die hard for fans.
Exactly. And, you know, I would say sports. I couldn't even say sports fans have, you know, such a long memory when it comes to things. So that, my comment was the John Cena part. But let's talk about something, again, you mentioned earlier, and this is going to drive my question, or questions, plural I have, is that you mentioned two people, Austin Theory and Raquel Rodriguez, about how they're not necessarily bonding with fans, you know, with Theory being a heel and Raquel Rodriguez being a face. And I remember on the VIP portion of the East Coast cast, rest in peace, temporarily anyway, that how Travis Bryant and Rich Fannin and even Travis Bryant and Rich Fan and myself, and even Cam Hawkins, talked about this a little bit, about how somebody, or maybe some people told Raquel, you need to smile more because, you know, hey, I love a good smile. You know, that's, that's humans like that. But, you know, she seemed like she overly smiled when she first really probably even graduated up into the main roster. Mm-hmm. But let's stick with her for a second, Greg. Okay, so I would agree that there's something there that she's not bonding with the fans. So let's say that she turns heel. Now, what I have up via Wikipedia, America's greatest news, greatest encyclopedia, I should say, I have the Raw women's roster up. So let's say that Raquel Rodriguez turns heel, because I think that a heel turn could kickstart people maybe seeing her a different way, of course, if she turns heel, but maybe bonding with her differently, you know, because now they're booing her. And just looking at the women's Raw roster, I picked three people that she could potentially just, and you know, and it doesn't have to be something necessarily anything drawn out. Maybe she just runs out and just attacks a person. But I picked Nikki Cross or Maxine Dupri or Tegan Knox as being people who could, and all three of them are different levels of, you know, however you want to say that, but at least to get her to turn heel. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like they were tag teaming in the match and she turns against them. She just runs out, you know, after Maxine Dupri is, you know, she's celebrating getting a win, and she just runs out, and Raquel just runs out and attacks her. So the question to you, first question I have here with Raquel, is that would you think that's something that could maybe jumpstart her to another level, and would a heel turn work for her?
Let me bring in PWTorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire along with me, who does the alternative reports of the pay-per-view. So, Brandon, thank you for joining me here tonight to help me talk Payback.
Yeah, of course. Glad to do it.
In terms of Brian's question, a heel turn for Raquel Rodriguez, I think to me, and you know, Brian threw out a couple names, to me the obvious thing would be Liv Morgan. And if you're going to have Raquel turning heel on Liv Morgan whenever she gets back from her shoulder injury that she's out with right now. First of all, Brandon, do you agree with the idea that there's a missing ingredient right now with Raquel Rodriguez that is just not allowing her to connect to the audience? And then secondly, do you believe that a heel turn would solve some of those issues?
Sure. So definitely on the first part, I certainly agree there is something missing there. And I noted it specifically in my report for PW Torch tonight when I was covering the show. You know, it was a good match, and Raquel and Rhea both worked hard. But the issue with this match in particular, and a lot of the matches that feature Rhea Ripley, is that Rhea is hands down one of the coolest characters that the company has right now. She's also one of the better women's wrestlers they have in ring. So she's kind of got two things working for her in terms of the crowd wanting to cheer her. But They're also hesitant to cheer her because they really dislike Dominic Mysterio, and she's, of course, associated with him. So what tends to happen is whoever her opponent is, there just isn't that much investment there because they really want to get into Rhea Ripley, and because she is so cool and she is, you know, so talented. And so it's hard for them to really get behind a challenger who isn't a well-established babyface. So I'm talking like somebody on the level of Becky Lynch. So as a result, you put her in there with someone like Raquel Rodriguez, who I agree has been struggling as a babyface thus far and hasn't really been given a lot of TV time to really establish herself in any significant way as a dominant or even really, you know, super competitive singles wrestler. She's had some success with Liv Morgan in the tag division. And I think you were set up for a crowd reaction exactly like the one you got tonight, where the crowd is going to be respectful. They're going to pop for the big moves, but generally speaking, they're pretty subdued. They're not particularly interested or invested in seeing Rhea lose the title. And so you just kind of get that ho-hum response. So in order to solve that, I mean, first of all, I think you can argue that Rhea might be miscast at this point, but on the side of Raquel Rodriguez, it's possible that a heel turn does her some good. And I think that her general look and just the size that she has is probably a little bit more conducive to her being a heel, at least until she can really figure the personality out. And I say that having just said that Rhea at this point seems a little bit miscast, but Rhea has got it all figured out. So obviously, you know, when she's that confident in her character, it can work a little bit better if she turns. Raquel is certainly not that, and she's got a long way to go in that territory. I agree with you, Greg. If you're going to do the switch, if you're going to turn her and give that a shot, I think that the most important thing is that she turns against somebody who the audience is actually invested in, because you can turn on somebody like Tegan Knox or like Shotzi over on SmackDown, for example, and the crowd isn't going to react to that strongly because they don't have a strong bond with those characters. But they do have a really strong bond with Liv Morgan, and I think people like their pairing together. So if you were to have her turn on Morgan, I think that's the best way to jumpstart a heel push if you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Brian, thoughts on that and your next question or comment for us?
Sure. And Brandon, it's good to talk to you. I think we've talked at least one time before. I hope you're having a good night as well. And I didn't want to necessarily go the easy way with Liv because, you know, I mean, wrestling is wrestling, you know, and teammates turn on each other all the time, but we've had, you know, several of those, and that's the reason why I didn't go down that route, but, you know, because it's like right there. That's why I picked Nikki mm-hmm. Cross and Maxine sure. Dupri and Tegan Knox as somebody who's a little bit off the beaten path. Great comments, Brandon. Thank you very much. So the second part is Austin Theory. So let's say, you know, Austin Theory, of course, is a heel right now. Let's say he turns face. Looking at the men's SmackDown roster via Wikipedia, what I have here is intriguing, gentlemen. I see what you think about it. What about if Austin Theory, I say challenges Roman Reigns, or maybe somehow he gets in Roman Reigns' orbit and there's a match there? Let's say that Austin Theory pins Solo Sikoa, so that drives him to have a match against Roman Reigns. Now, the good subpart about, again, hopefully this will, again, kickstart, this is all about Austin Theory, kickstarting him and making him a baby face, but also this is something that editor-publisher Wade Keller said for over the years about Roman Reigns really needs a nice win and a nice clean win. And this kind of really goes back, Greg and Brandon, to really almost JBL, where JBL was, you know, for a while he was like the longest, you know, WWE champion for a while, you know, pre or post Hogan. But he never had any clean wins. And I remember back in the day or back during his run, Wade was, you know, advocating, hey, he needs to get some kind of win to at least show that he's not, you know, a chicken beep champion. And with Roman, you know, the three of us know and the callers, of course, know about, you know, most of Roman's matches have been like a ton of interference. So, I would think that it would be good for Roman to get a good, clean win. It could be a TV win, a TV series, or it could be, you know, one of these you know, payback pay-per-views where Austin Theory gets a title shot, but where Roman gets a clean pin. So, again, my Roman, let's go to Austin Theory, so let's clean everything up, having him turn face by challenging, you know, going against the Ultimate Heels being Solo, Sokoa, and Roman Reigns. What are your thoughts about that, gentlemen?
You know, I think, you know, if we're talking about jump-starting Raquel in Theory by turning them, I think Rodriguez has a better chance of being sort of jump-started by a heel turn than Theory does with a babyface turn. I think it could be more effective for Raquel than it would be for Austin Theory. I just really have a hard time, and I think, you know, Brandon laid out some good reasons why Raquel as a heel makes sense. And I just have a hard time seeing Austin Theory as a babyface right now. I think it would feel to certain segments of the fans like desperation, because I think there is an acknowledgement that, you know, he's sort of treading water right now as a heel. And I don't know if that's really the time that you want to ask fans to get on board and start cheering somebody when it's readily obvious that that person has kind of hit a ceiling the way that Austin Theory did. I mean, remember, he was appearing on TV. He was the next big thing. He was in backstage segments with Vince McMahon, of all people. So, you know, he was tagged as the next big thing. And then you look at where he is now, and I don't think it's arguable that he has not reached that potential yet. So I think if you turn him babyface, it's just, I think it's going to be a hard sell to the audience. You know, setting aside the plan, Brian, that you laid out of facing Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa and whatever the case may be, I mean, that may be an easier way to get fans to cheer Theory by putting him against ultimate heels in Reigns and Sikoa. But, Brandon, I mean, do you think a babyface turn could work to get Theory back on track?
I'm not sure right now, anyway. He's a really cold character right now. And I think that the pairing with Grayson Waller is doing less for him than I think WWE would hope that it is. And I say that because I've mentioned this before on some post shows with Wade, and I think it's an opinion that Todd has also brought up and probably some others as well. But it feels to me like Grayson Waller sort of is what they want Austin Theory to be. And so, you know, having the two play off of each other, I feel like Theory's weaknesses become even more apparent. And I think that he needs some rehabilitation before they really consider, you know, casting him in a different role or trying to move him up the card. Greg, I think you hit the nail on the head that if they turn him out of the blue right now, it might feel a little desperate, and the crowd might latch on to that idea and just reject it, just reject the idea of cheering him. He would have to show something really genuine, and the push would have to be very, very calculated, almost like how they've treated Cody Rhodes. And I don't want to compare the two in anything other than to say that Rhodes has been protected, and his segments and his involvement with other people on screen, they have been so careful with that every step of the way to make sure that he comes off like the biggest babyface in the world in a way that fans are actually invested in cheering for him. And that's been intentional. I mean, you even saw it tonight with his involvement with Jey Uso. They didn't need to do that. They did that because Jey Uso is cool, and they want the rub of Jey Uso to come off on Cody Rhodes, and it works. And so I think if you were going to turn Theory right now, you'd have to have a plan as calculated as that, because otherwise I'm just not sure that the crowd is ready to cheer for him. But to Brian's idea about Roman Reigns and giving Roman Reigns a clean win over somebody, that I'm in firm agreement with. I think that it's important for every once in a while for your dominant heel champion to actually do things without the assistance of Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa, previously the Usos. I would like to see him face a challenger at one of these pay-per-views where they actually, you know, are able to have him on the show, where it can be built up as a challenger of the month, where you kind of feel pretty confident that Reigns is going to retain. And then he does, but he just straight up, does it clean? Because, yeah, I think that they, for one, they've gotten a little too formulaic with his title defenses. They all kind of feature the same interference over and over again, and oftentimes multiple times in one match. So, yes, I'm in firm agreement there, just not sure that Theory would be the right guy right now.
And not to spend too much time pontificating about somebody who was not even on this pay-per-view, but that's something that I brought up in a recent roundtable review, that, you know, there is a disconnect between how WWE talks about Roman Reigns as champion
mm-hmm.
and how he's presented in matches where, you know, he is the most
mm-hmm.
dominant champion of all time and all this stuff, and yet he can't beat the schlubs of the challenging world without interference. And you do kind of feel like that's a crutch that WWE relies
mm-hmm.
on every month to advance the Bloodline storyline, as if that's the only way they know how to do it anymore, is they can't
yep.
they can't advance that storyline on pay-per-view without there being some sort of interference in the matches. And so I agree. I would like to see Roman Reigns be able to win against guys who, I mean, you know, he was having to cheat to beat, like, you know, Kevin Owens and stuff like that, who, you know, God love Kevin Owens. He's a great character. He has a great role in WWE, but he has certainly has not been presented as being on Roman Reigns' level or,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a, even a believable someone who could actually beat him. And yet, you know, Roman is you know, using interference to win. So agree with that part for sure. Brian, anything else for us tonight?
No, I do not. I do not have anything, but I really appreciate the conversation. And like you were saying, Greg and Brandon, you know, to put WWE in this one part is that they do seem to the commentators or commentary team, you know, they do say, hey, you know, Roman Reigns has been champion for 3 years, but they don't, you know, they don't during the matches. Of course, they'll say, hey, you know, darn it. He cheated again to win. But then after that, it's like, okay, he's been a dominant champion for 3 years. But that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, right out of
right.
The WWE 101 playbook or announce book. So
yep.
I'll let some other callers, and you can read some emails. You can have some other calls get on. You can read some emails. I know it's midnight or like about to be midnight East Coast time. So thanks a lot, as always, Greg. Brandon, it's good to talk to you again. And for those of yourselves who are listening and you're not a VIP subscriber, I suggest you look into it as pwtorch.com. Greg, you can go ahead and finish the rest of that plug, and hopefully everybody has a really great night. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Brian, as always. 32-year subscriber. So if it's good enough for Brian for 32 years, it's good enough for you. pwtorch.com/govip. Resetting things here, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, being joined by pwtorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire, who does the Alternative Perspective PLE and pay-per-view reviews for pwtorch.com. Brandon, we've got a couple emails in reaction to tonight's event, so I want to get to those here. This is from Cy. He says, there's a method to the so-called B shows, motivated roster with a point to prove. Becky, Trish, and the tag match delivered, especially pretty good show. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah. I mean, I call this the weakest premium live event of the year for WWE, and that's not a knock, because it's been an exceptionally strong year for them and these shows. But I think if you just run down, you know, the way these shows have gone, I think this was the least important. I think that it was the least consequential coming out. But that doesn't mean it wasn't a worthwhile show. I mean, it was a solid three hours and 20 minutes of wrestling with, you're absolutely right, a motivated roster, some really good matches. I too really liked the cage match in particular to start the night, and I really enjoyed the tag team title match despite the copious amounts of interference. So yeah, a good show, not a very newsworthy show, but not all of them have to be. Saying it's the worst of the year is not a bad thing when all of them have been good.
Another email we got comes from Doug from Vancouver, British Columbia. He says, Speaking of the women's match that we just talked about, Raquel was slow, awkward, and awful tonight. There was at no time did I think the championship was changing hands. Who do you think has a chance to beat Rhea for the women's championship on this roster? I thought that was a little harsh assessment of Raquel, but I think, and I tweeted this out during the show. I thought that she was, and let me find that tweet so I can read exactly what I sent out. I said she seemed a little out of her depth in that match, and so I think that was maybe the kind version of what Doug was saying in that email. As far as challengers, I mean, you look at the Raw women's roster, as Brian did. I'll pull up Wikipedia and see who's on the list there. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't see her losing it for a while. So I'm not sure we even really need to delve that deep into the roster right now, because things might change quite a bit by the time we're really talking about her losing. I think if Zoe Stark's babyface turn sticks, I think down the line she's got a chance at it. I think you got to talk about Becky Lynch. I don't think Becky and Rhea have had a really proper feud, at least since Rhea has been in this character that's just taken over and taken off the way it has. So I would say those two. You know, I'm looking down the roster, you know, Maxine Dupree would be like a TV challenger. She picks up a couple wins as a comedy figure, something like that. But, you know, I think maybe a couple of years ago you could have made the argument Candice LeRae, but she's not really in a position. Unless it's a TV match, I don't see her on pay-per-view challenging for it. You know, they don't need a challenger every pay-per-view. You know, we didn't have the other women's championship being defended here. So, you know, you don't need to find a challenger for every month anymore. But those are the two names that stick out to me, Becky and Zoe. And for Zoe, I'm talking, you know, toward the end of the year, maybe at the earliest. So your assessment of Raquel Rodriguez in that match, and then potential future, I mean, real legitimate contenders to actually take the title off Rhea that you can see on the Raw roster.
Yeah, so on the Raquel subject, I mean, I got into it a little bit at the start of our conversation. I thought she was fine tonight. You know, I'm going to cut her some level of slack here, because I certainly don't recall her wrestling a 17-minute match by herself on the main roster yet. I would think that this would be one of, if not her longest match in her main roster career so far. And, yes, she had a really, really good opponent who can carry her through the paces. But I thought she did a good enough job. And I have certainly not been a defender of her character or her performances to date, but I thought it was serviceable. I thought they had a solid enough match. I do think that it probably would have benefited from shaving a few minutes off in the middle. I think that, you know, just given where Raquel is at, given how dominant you want to present Rhea Ripley, I think a few minutes taken off the middle could have helped the match along. The other thing that I would have noted about this match, I just thought, you know, on a show where four out of six matches had interference, this one felt the most unnecessary. I mean, Rhea Ripley, being as dominant as who she is, facing a challenger who, let's be honest, has not been presented as anything other than a mid-card challenger on a B-level pay-per-view, she shouldn't have needed help from Dominic Mysterio to win this match. And I know that Dominic got taken out by Raquel, and technically Rhea won clean, but the interference was still there. And I think that they would have been better suited just giving Rhea a strong, clean win. I just don't think that Dom needed to get involved in this thing at all. As for challengers for Rhea, I think first of all, you're right when you say that they don't need a ton of challengers lined up before the start of the year. I mean, if things go the way that they've been going with these B-level pay-per-views, they seem to like to trade off title defenses, which would indicate to me that it'll be Io Sky on next month's Fastlane. And then we're going to be looking at Survivor Series. So whether they return to the War Games format or they go with the champion versus champion stuff again, I think that Rhea is probably not going to be looking at a title defense at that event. which means that we're into December now. We're into Christmas time before she really needs a significant challenger. And Rhea doesn't have to get in a lot of individual title programs to fill time on TV because she's so heavily involved in everything that Judgment Day does. So so she's really covered for the next several months. I think, like you said, Zoe Stark makes sense. There are some women on Raw who they can build up to be TV challengers if they absolutely need to. But the one that I'm definitely looking at is Becky Lynch. Becky has been away from the title picture for a long time. She's wrapping up her stuff with Trish Stratus and Zoe Stark. I'd like to see them kept apart for a while, but start to hint at the fact that there might be something brewing there. And to me, that's your WrestleMania title match. You don't burn that before WrestleMania. That is, as far as I'm concerned, if they can keep Becky strong, get some more momentum behind her, continue on this path with Rhea Ripley, that's a solid night one main event.
So going back to what you said about Rhea Ripley not needing the interference to win, and it's sort of the same argument we made for Roman Reigns, to play devil's advocate a little bit, how beneficial is it to have, because the argument would be, I guess, no, Rhea Ripley and Roman Reigns don't need the interference, but they're heels. So it's a very heelish thing to do to basically accept outside interference in your matches when you don't even need it. Does that add a level of heat that makes it worth it, do you think, to these heels?
I don't think so. I think particularly because they're both still cool. I mean, like, the heat that Ripley and that Reigns are able to get typically only comes when they're facing off against a babyface challenger who is also hot. When you see Rhea facing somebody who the crowd isn't particularly invested in, yeah, she gets some boos during her announcements, but, like, really, people are invested in her as a character. They're chanting mommy. They're invested in her as a champion. I don't think the interference does anything other than say, well, here's WWE taking the cheap way out again. Because, I mean, the crowd is very much in tune with what they do. And I think that you're starting to see that come to life with Roman Reigns' title defenses too, especially, you know, the Jey Uso match at SummerSlam, which was just riddled with interference and just felt, I mean, just horribly overbooked. I think it puts more heat on the promotion than it does the characters, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Just throwing that out there because that's an argument that I think can be made to basically make an argument for that interference in these types of matches. So again, 515-605-9345. If you want to talk to us, press 1 to show up in the queue to chat. What do you think of the show, Brandon? Thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, thumbs down. I know when I talked to you on the previous show last week, you said you kind of need a little bit of a breather before you give it a 1 to 10 score, so I won't ask you for that, but just your overall thoughts on tonight's Payback event.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thumbs-up show for me. I guess if we're scaling our thumbs-up, it's a more mild thumbs-up just because, as I mentioned earlier, I think it was a pretty inconsequential event overall, and I don't think there's a whole lot of news coming out of it. But, I mean, it was strong wrestling throughout the night. Like I said, I really liked the cage match. I really liked the tag team title match. I thought that even though Nakamura and Seth never, you know, stepped to the level of any of Nakamura's Japan work or, you know, his match with Sami Zayn in NXT, I thought it was good. It was a good match and probably as good as we can really expect for Shinsuke at this stage of his career. Seth was a good opponent for him, and I thought they had a good match, despite the crowd not feeling overly invested in it. And that was kind of the name of the game tonight. You know, good wrestling, pretty much top to bottom. Crowd was respectful and was loud when they really needed to be loud. But I think that the building had a sense that they were seeing a bottom-level, B-level pay-per-view. I don't think that they were under any other impression. I mean, the card kind of gave that away. And I think what they did tonight gave that away. But doesn't mean it wasn't a good show. It just wasn't particularly notable.
Best match on the show, would that be the opener, do you think?
I think so. I think I'd give the nod to the opener just because it had a little bit more behind it. I thought that the crowd was really great for the tag title match, and so that helped that one along considerably. But I'll take it down just a peg because of the incessant interference in that one. I thought Trish and Becky told a little bit better of a story. So yeah, I'd go with the cage as the best of the night.
What did you think of the turn afterward? Because they set it up as a babyface turn for Zoe Stark, and I don't know that the fans received it that way, and I don't know that I viewed it that way necessarily.
Yeah, me either. I it almost felt to me like maybe it would be, the mentor Trish being wronged by the student, and Trish would instead be the babyface. I think people are naturally inclined to want to hear Trish. I think it was easy to slot her in the heel role against Becky because Becky is who she is, and she's so over with the crowd. But if you have Trish facing off against somebody like Zoe Stark, who hasn't really established themselves in any major way for the audience as anyone other than a lackey to Trish, I think it's going to be really hard to get people to boo someone of Trish's stature and presence. I mean, people grew up with her. They want to naturally cheer her, and she's a likable personality in general, and I think they're going to be inclined to just cheer her. So it wouldn't be surprised if I wouldn't be surprised if they have to flip this around, and especially if they have a match, you've got to figure Stark is going to be more dominant. Trish is the more diminutive figure, so naturally, I think it just works better that Zoe is the heel. But we'll see. I would have liked the pairing to last a little bit longer than tonight. But I noted in my report, I just wondered if maybe this was done as a means to an end because Trish isn't going to be around for, a considerable length of time. Maybe they have to get to this quickly.
Yeah, that's the question I was wondering, too, is how long. Because, I mean, she's been basically full time since she got back, which I don't think is anything anybody expected that.
Hasn't she been working live events, too?
That I'm not sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I think that...
I want to say she was doing some house shows, too, but maybe not.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, for someone of her stature
and
age with her family to be on the road doing that is, something she doesn't have to do. So credit to her if in fact, she is doing that. Second match on the show was LA Knight over The Miz with John Cena as special referee. Long match for LA Knight. I mean, I said at the outset, kind of felt like it was a test by WWE to see if he could hang for that long and, keep the crowd and all that stuff like that. What was your sense of just the match itself? These are two wrestlers who are not known to be smooth in the ring, but, I thought for the most part it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a solid TV-style match. I thought, it could have fit in fine on Raw or SmackDown or the undercard of a pay-per-view. I thought they worked hard. Miz can pull off some good stuff when he's motivated, when he has the right opponent, and he seemed really interested and invested in helping Knight, stay over. I don't want to say get over because he's certainly already there. Crowd was fully invested and fully behind Knight from start to finish. I mean, they love doing the yap, and I think right now it works, and it's fun to do, and it's cool, and that's good. Cena played his part well. I mean, he was, despite, obviously being the biggest star in the ring by a considerable margin, he stayed out of the way. And the crowd, I think an indicator of just how over LA Knight is the fact that the crowd, at no point did they defer to John Cena. And they very easily could have. The fact that they stayed so invested in LA Knight from start to finish, despite having the biggest star of the last 20 years in the ring with him, was a really good sign. It's a really good sign that Knight is holding his own and can hold his own against heavyweights. So that was good. And I thought that the ringing endorsement from Cena after the match was good, too. I mean, that was... that's the same kind of stuff they pulled later in the night with Cody Rhodes, you know, kind of tipping his hat to Jey Uso. You get a big name in there with a lot of cachet to lend credit to a guy who was on the rise, and it worked.
Rey Mysterio over Austin Theory. We talked about Austin Theory earlier on in the show, but it, you know, technically a good match, but it's just, again, it goes back to something missing with Austin Theory in terms of his character in the ring from bell to bell. He's a good wrestler. I don't want that to get confused. He's a good wrestler, but that, in a similar way to what we talk about with Raquel Rodriguez, it just feels like there's a connection missing with the crowd once that bell rings.
Yeah, there's a disinterest there from the crowd, and it's unfortunate that the U.S. Championship has sort of fallen out of favor again, because they were doing such a great job with both the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title for such a long time, and of course, that prestige has held firm with the Intercontinental title, and Gunther has a big defense on Monday that I know people are very much looking forward to. But that hasn't been the case with the U.S. title. It fell down the ranks quite considerably in the back half of Austin Theory's run with it. Once he sort of lost momentum after the Cena match at WrestleMania, it really sort of fell by the wayside. And I think moving it to Rey Mysterio in the manner in which they did certainly suggests that, you know, it became a bit of a back burner situation. So I'm hoping they can do something before too long to get it back in the spotlight. I don't know if that's going to be a long-term run for Mysterio. I mean, he doesn't necessarily strike me as someone who is going to have an inspired championship run, unless they do something more akin to – and I mean, I say that not to take away anything from Mysterio. He's still doing great work in the ring. It's just that – as a character at this stage of his career, it doesn't feel like a title suited for him in any way other than it being a victory lap. And right. I think when you do that with a veteran, you're setting yourself up for a situation where the title doesn't feel very important. So unless they were to put him in a scenario much like John Cena was in 2015, when he went on that really, really fun run with the title, I just don't see much coming of this run. I mean, match was fine. It was what it was. It was entertaining enough. And I did note one thing that struck me in particular. I thought Austin Theory's offense was a little varied here, and he was able to show off a little bit more of his power moveset in the way that, you know, Theory's not a huge guy, but because he has a significant, you know, height and size advantage on Mysterio, he was the bigger guy in this match, able to execute some cooler power moves and to carry Mysterio around in a way that you don't often see Theory do with other opponents. So I thought the juxtaposition of that worked well, but it was just a, you know, a vehicle to move Theory on to the next thing, to move Rey on to the next thing.
Next segment was Jey Uso joining the Raw roster. I argued earlier in the show this is a good move. I think he needed the refresh. I think when he eventually re-engages with the Bloodline storyline, it will feel fresher, and I think it was very much needed at this stage. Coming out of SummerSlam, where I was just really not impressed with the booking decisions made there in terms of the Usos and what happened with them. So, I think this is the right move. What say you?
Yeah, it's the right move. I think that Jey Uso has become too important of a character to sacrifice the momentum he's built over the last 6 months to a year by keeping him off TV long term. And I think that the only way that you can do that and not have him look foolish for quitting SmackDown and for leaving the Bloodline is to put him on the opposing brand. So moving him to Raw, having him be an active part of the roster who can still wrestle on a weekly basis and get involved in other feuds, and really let this main event Jey Uso character take off and find footing on its own away from the Bloodline is a smart move. And he's either going to sink or swim. We're either going to find out that everything that he did in the Bloodline is for real and he should be taken seriously as a top guy within WWE's current landscape, or we're going to find out that it was really Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman and the, you know, it was the amalgamation of all of the characters together that was making Jay seem as incredible as he's been. I suspect it's probably going to be closer to the former. I think Jay is supremely talented. I think he's shown a knack for having incredible facial expressions and a real understanding of what it's like to play his character. And I think he's going to succeed on his own over on Raw. But, I mean, I could be wrong. Time will certainly tell. But I think getting him over on Raw, getting him away from the Bloodline story so that when they do cross paths again, it feels fresh, it feels different, and there's something else under Jey Uso's belt is a net positive all around.
I think we've talked at length about the main event and the semi-main event, so we'll leave that there. I want to end, Brandon, with the CM Punk news from today. AEW released a statement on their Twitter feed that basically said that CM Punk had been fired with cause. Collision tonight prior to it going on the air, taking place in Chicago. Tony Khan came out and addressed the crowd about the situation. So credits to Tony Khan for taking one on the chin from the Chicago crowd to kind of explain the whys and explain his stance, probably also to head off any CM Punk chance that would take place during the show and kind of let fans get it out of their system there. Just your general reaction to that news that we learned this afternoon.
Yeah, what a whirlwind of a week for AEW. Huh? I mean, you and I talked on Sunday after All In, and things felt largely positive. I mean, they were coming off this incredibly historic accomplishment, putting over 80,000 people in Wembley Stadium, you know, legit paid over 80,000. And I thought it was a really good show from top to bottom with, you know, only a couple of pretty minimal qualms. I thought it was a good step up in production. The list goes on. I mean, I had a ton of praise for All In, and all of that still rings true. And what has followed has been a really, really challenging week for that company. One of the most, maybe in the company's history. I mean, a really poor Dynamite, an incredibly disappointing card for All Out. And then this news that, you know, another instance of backstage drama spills over into social media and into the public spotlight, and it results in perhaps the company's biggest draw being fired. I said on X or Twitter a little earlier today, I understand why Khan did what he did. I think it is, in fact, more than likely the right move. But with that being said, to me personally, I think the show, particularly Collision, instantly becomes a little less interesting. And they are going to have to work very hard to make that show not feel like a deflated balloon. Because Collision was introduced both by Tony Khan or by Tony Khan, by AEW as a company, and by Warner Media as CM Punk's show. And less than 3 months into its run, he's gone. It's a bad look for the company, for Tony, for Punk. It's a bad look for... It's a negative for the fans who likely bought tickets to these events in Chicago this week, expecting to see CM Punk, wanting to see CM Punk, and already reeling from the fact that they're getting a truncated card for All Out when compared to last week's All In. There's got to be significant discontent in that market. And I'm curious to hear from people who were in the building tonight, who are going to be in the building tomorrow, what the atmosphere is like, because there's a lot going on there right now, and it's not a positive vibe surrounding that company, which is really unfortunate given how successful the show was last week. I'm rambling a little because a lot of this is still just so new to me. I found out, I think maybe a couple hours after the story originally broke, and I went into coverage of Payback so quickly that I'm still kind of processing it, but it's a blow. It's a blow to their creative. I think it's a blow to a lot of the plans that they had. I think you can very easily surmise where they were headed, that they wanted to do MJF versus CM Punk to determine the quote-unquote real AEW world champion. And given how we left off last week with All In, I think it's probably safe to assume that MJF was going to be the babyface in that match and Punk the heel, which was a really interesting dynamic that I really would have enjoyed seeing. So it's a shame we're not going to get there. I wonder if this is officially the end for Punk or if there is actual interest for him to return to WWE. I know that there have been murmurs based on his speech at the Cauliflower Club this past week. I haven't watched it myself, but I did hear that he was not at all negative toward WWE or Triple H especially. So it'll be fascinating to see if there's interest there from either side. But yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, and I think that we're in for a rough ride for the next few weeks with Collision until they can establish what the replacement's going to be.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this situation more tomorrow night with callers and emailers after All Out, but I know, Brandon, that you won't be able to join us, so I wanted to get your thoughts here tonight. And I do agree with you about the Collision situation and about AEW really taking a hit in one of their key markets, that being Chicago. The one thing I will say is I think it's a short-term loss for what they hope is a long-term gain.
Sure.
Because they had to take this on the chin in the short term by getting rid of CM Punk, but I think their view is the long view, that over this was not sustainable, right? You could not keep going on like this, and I don't care whether you want to blame CM Punk for this stuff or the Jack Perrys and the elites of the locker room for this.
Oh, I think there's blame everywhere.
Yes, there certainly is, but some fans are a little more tribal than others in terms of wanting to lay the most of the blame at the feet of one side or the other. So regardless of where you stand on that, this simply was not a sustainable situation. And so I do think something had to be done. I think Tony Khan, for every incident that Tony Khan let go without handing down some level of extreme punishment, meant that his leadership was being challenged a little more. And so I think
Absolutely.
He did need to put his foot down at some point. And I think this was, you know, it probably should have happened long before this, but I think if he didn't do it now, it would have been a bigger black eye, perhaps even more so than Brawl Out, that he needed to do something in this instance. And we know that Punk was fired. I don't think we know for sure what Jack Perry's punishment is. I know there's rumors of a suspension, but I don't think AEW has made that public. You know, so I think a lot of people saw this coming, and I think that's the sad part. When CM Punk signed with AEW, there were a lot of people who kind of joked about how long this would last, and, you know, because CM Punk just never seems to be content. And so it's unfortunate that that ended up coming true. And it's especially unfortunate given, I mean, you know, from a personal standpoint, Tony Khan being such a big fan of CM Punk. I mean, no one wanted this to work more personally or professionally than Tony Khan. You know that this was only a last resort that he could possibly take. If there were any way he could have gotten around this, this end game, that he would have. And, you know, how this relationship started, where Tony Khan and CM Punk were interacting with each other before Punk had even signed, and Khan's courtship, and CM Punk actually trusting Tony Khan enough in a business where it didn't seem like Punk had trusted anyone anymore. And putting his trust in Tony Khan, it's unfortunate the way that it ended because it started so promising. And I think, you know, it is sad to look back on how it started and where we've ended up. I think, you know, just from a pure wrestling business standpoint, CM Punk back in WWE would be absolutely fascinating. And I think there's a level of Triple H. I think Triple H is a lot like Vince McMahon, where they sort of live to kind of want to bury the hatchet. I mean, Triple H was the one that got Bruno Sammartino back in the WWE fold. So I think they both share that of wanting to work with people who have felt wronged by them before. And I think CM Punk is sort of the last guy out there now that they can reach out to who has been so public in their feelings about WWE and, you know, namely Vince and Triple H, that I think they would welcome CM Punk back into WWE. I think, you know, based on a lot of things, as you mentioned, the Cauliflower Alley Club comments by Punk, there are some signs that Punk would be receptive to going back to WWE, which is, I mean, when you think of when that Colt Cabana podcast dropped, it's mind-blowing to think that we've even gotten to this point. But I think, as Wade Keller has reported, as others have reported, there seems to be a lot of resistance among people, namely the top stars in WWE, of CM Punk coming back on board. And so I think that's going to be something that could be a roadblock for Punk coming back to WWE. But this is a huge news story. And, you know, there's going to be tons of news that comes out about this, tons of fallout. I'm sure lawsuits will be filed about this. So this is certainly not the end of this story. In fact, it could be just the beginning. But
it rarely ever ends when it involves Punk.
I know. I know. And so, you know, if you're listening to this and you're an AEW fan or you've got thoughts about Punk, give us a call tomorrow night. We're going to be on the air after All Out goes off the air. We'll talk All Out, but I'm sure we will be talking about CM Punk again as well. Who knows? Some things may be happening between now and then. You never know. So more news will drop. So for sure that is something we'll talk about tomorrow night after All Out. So, Brandon, I thank you for joining me once again, helping me navigate this post-PLE show payback tonight. Before I let you go, where fans can find you on Twitter/X and the work you do for The Torch?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter or X, at BLeClaire12. Mostly talk wrestling. I'll also probably be throwing in some football here and there now that we're just getting going with the upcoming NFL season. Very excited for that. And some movies and music occasionally as well. For The Torch, I provide alt-perspective pay-per-view coverage for almost all WWE premium live events and AEW pay-per-views. The one exception for this year will be tomorrow night, All Out. I have a prior commitment that is taking me out of the state for the day. So when All In originally got announced, I thought it was safe to book myself because I thought, oh, there's no way they're going to do All Out. And then sure enough, they are. So no alt perspective coverage tomorrow for All Out, but I will be back for Fastlane in October and the new AEW pay-per-view, Wrestle Dreams. So I will be back business as usual for those. And then you can also catch me occasionally here on Wrestling Night in America with Greg. And also once every 3 weeks or so on the PW Torch post Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite shows with Wade Keller.
Thanks again, Brandon. Good to have you on the show.
Yeah.
All right, thanks again for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my VIP audio show, Greg Parks Out Loud, each and every week for VIP members of PWTorch.com. And catch us again tomorrow night. We're doing a doubleheader this weekend. We're going to be talking All Out tomorrow night after that show goes off the air. You can send us your emails about the show, WNIALivecast@gmail.com, or call us up, 515-605-9345. Until tomorrow night, this has been Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks.